Your ATM is safe. Your banks are safe. There's enough cash in the financial system. And there is an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
Then I would sell my Bitcoin right into this rally. And believe me, I have been a believer one time in Bitcoin. Not here, not out. Find somebody to love, don't you?
On this trend has been margin called. Think it was a hook. Trust to your idols, now they got you shook. Believe in the crooks. Other percent. Are they cooking the books? Sip up a day and hours to the day. Another new rent rush is getting away. Bigger the bank. Bigger rent with fat. When it all blows up, it is you who will pay.
Behind the ass inside the success. Pull back the curtains and what do you get? And it's the risk with a visit in that. Made from your savings. And still I won't care. Give it to the other side of the trade. Socialized lessons while we've been the game. First to fall in the straight with small. Cause you're just a pawn in the continuing this game.
I need all to pay for the show. Pay for the cloud. Pay for the throne. Pay for the media to lie to our face. Store the truth so we repeat our mistakes. Sell us the dream that never delivers. While raking in fees and clipping the tickets. Siphoning funds from mouthless bigots. Blindly the blind to the all complicit. Money is cheap and addicted to growth. Commingle the risks so nobody knows. How far ever go to a damaged collateral. Another excuse for oppressive control. When government capture is private play. Reapers of value at the end of the day. We're calling for help but nobody came. Don't bail us for pawns and complainers.
Money deeply rots at the core. Don't believe in tangible cure. This crypto contagion stems from a system that incentivized fraud. As schemes get more complex, fallible humans left unchecked. Playing the dark is how you get wrecked. And our economies are largely to X.
What would happen if we take our money out of resistance? Why protest our labor when we can pull out our capital? Where would we be if our money and richness? Simply by holding privilege and power. How do we build a base? Replace the utility effects with the will of free markets.
Give an independent system to revolt.
Step 2.
Move a savings into that system so no one can ever do that shit.
Step 3.
Earn, save, spend, trade. All activities moving this way. We got home money. Everything changed. We no longer have to continue to change.
My dream works as high as our desire. Earn it by wearing it. Every time earning a larger piece of life. Or if you want to be earned by. Money is the art of power. What went the best? You keep scoring a politician. Come and capture it out of the place. And we reap the value at the end of the day.
So we can move value without being sensitive. Move on from gambling, saving. Move on from all the politics. Move on to the end of the internet.
So we don't got just every word that they say. So if freedom and wealth can be taken away.
So we treat and punish all the same.
So we can get the children this game.
Knowing the truth will break the frame. Now our perspectives forever change. Truth is the key for us to reclaim.
Open the door, it's the game.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces, episode 102. I am your host, Coleman, and I want to say good morning to everybody listening to us. We're going to have a great show today. We have Bob Burnett joining us with Barefoot Mining. So I'm really looking forward to asking him some questions, especially when it comes to the race for block space, when we start getting these large corporations, banks, and countries putting Bitcoin on their treasuries and balance sheets, and how and why this is going to be so important. So really looking forward to this. In case you live underneath a rock, Donald Trump was sworn in as president yesterday, and up until this moment, there has been zero talk of Bitcoin or the freeing of Ross. So I think a lot of Bitcoiners showed our high time preference with that. I think we're all expecting something to happen immediately. And again, he's just got an office. As much as we would like to think that we are important, we're just a little speck in his daily lives. So give us some time. I think we'll hear something today about Ross, and I expect during this week we're going to hear something about Bitcoin or the crypto industry being spoken from Trump. There was a lot of donors, a lot of people, a lot of events he went to, so it would be very smart of him not to mention it at all. So as it plays out, we'll kind of see how things are going. But again, I just want to say good morning for everyone tuning in. And if you could, just do me a quick favor, go to the top of the screen here and go ahead and reshare this link. Let's get a lot of people listening to this space. We're going to have a great show. And without further ado, I want to welcome Bob Burnett to the stage. Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Good morning. Good morning. Nice to be here.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for joining us. I don't know what part of the country you're in, but down here in Texas, specifically Houston, it's pretty chilly. We got about 3 inches of snow overnight, so it's something that's very unusual for us.
Well, I'm in Naples, Florida, so but even for us, it's pretty chilly. It's in the 50s, which is earth-shatteringly cold for people down here. So, but hey, lots going on in the world, huh? So yesterday was a big day. I heard you kind of briefing through the Trump stuff, and obviously we're all waiting for news about Ross and hopefully Strategic Bitcoin Reserve, but man, change is in the air.
Yeah, there's definite change. I think it's positive change. When you look at the two outcomes that we had, we had Harris or Trump, like regardless of what Trump is pushing with the shit coins, this was a better option of the two. You can't have a perfect world. You have to deal the hand that you're given. So I think this is the best scenario for both of those. But I'd like to pick your brain a little bit, Bob. Like, what do you think? Do you really think that they will have, or Trump will mention a Strategic Bitcoin Reserve this week or within the next couple of weeks?
I would say that is the most likely scenario. Yes. I think it will happen. I don't know the nature of it. I've heard several different possibilities in terms of the shape that it may form from, maybe there's not initially much buying and that, you know, we're kind of wait for things to accumulate through more the legal process, seizures, maybe opening up tax payments, some of those sort of things, that the reserve gets built more of that route. But on the other hand, I've heard kind of the opposite of that, like there would be an aggressive acquisition plan. I really don't know. I mean, I'm getting secondhand information, but I do think Trump will ultimately do something positive for the space. I really hope it's not too laden with other stuff, which is kind of the other side of this. Will it be a Bitcoin reserve or a crypto reserve? You know, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I hope that your first prediction is right, where he does it slow. He talks about it, but he just puts more friendly regulations in place. So no tax on Bitcoin would be amazing. I mean, I think the other one that we're all kind of sleeping on is the reversal of the SOB 121, allowing the banks to get in there and start holding on their balance sheets. I think the ramifications of that will be monumental. I just caught a clip of it this morning. It was the CEO of Bank of America said that if banks are able to do it, there'll be a huge flood, of everyone trying to acquire it. So if you want to kind of, go into that a little bit, we can, Bob.
Yeah. Well, this is a big thing. And I know it's somewhat controversial within the Bitcoin community because it's positive in the respect that I think it accelerates adoption. If you're a number go up person, it definitely fuels number go up. If you're kind of a maxi, then things like the SBR and institutional adoption and custody, like these sort of things, you mentioned Bank of America, those sort of organizations participating in Bitcoin kind of give you the willies. So it's my opinion, I'm not going to make a judgment whether either of those things is actually good or bad. But what I will say, because I think I can argue both sides of it, but I believe it is the natural course that again, when I consider myself a maxi, but I think there's a group even like the maxi that would say, well, you know, Bitcoin is about separation of money from state. It's about separation of money from Wall Street and big banking. And these two events are the presence of both of those things inside Bitcoin. But my perspective is that Bitcoin can never reach its potential unless those types of organizations ultimately participate. And that to believe that the world would hyper-Bitcoinize and not have those types of organizations participating is somewhat delusional. So in other words, you know, Bitcoin can either fulfill its destiny of being the base layer of money for the world, in which case those organizations participate, or it can fill some kind of niche in the world, but it doesn't have the impact. You can't really have both. And maybe I'll pause for a second, but you know, then there's the second order effect of that, if we assume that those organizations are coming in. But I'll pause before I get to that. Maybe let you guys comment.
No, I don't have anything to add to it. I think it's just the natural progression of Bitcoin's adoption and evolution and just kind of infiltrating everything. And I do think it's a cleanser though. I think once you start adopting it, as long as you're playing truly with Bitcoin and you're not trying to manipulate it, I think it kind of purifies everything. And so it'll kind of get rid of all the junk. And I don't know how you get to global Bitcoin adoption without these corporations, banks, governments adopting it. So I just don't see how that's possible.
Yeah, I agree. And there's that old phrase, you know, Bitcoin is for enemies. And I think we have to adapt that. It's not, I think that's the big thing, is we live in a world in which money has been used as a weapon. It's been used as a means of control. So both, in other words, both at the nation state level and at the individual level, money is used way outside, I believe, its proper purposes. And we can't expect that these types of organizations just will sit by and let this thing pass them by. Like, it's just not realistic. To a certain degree, I am surprised. If you asked me 3 or 4 years ago, would we be here today? I would have put the probability at pretty low, honestly. So I think it, you know, there's an acceleration here. And we've seen things like, I'm sure you guys have seen it, but, you know, the Russian trade minister has acknowledged that Russia now uses Bitcoin for international trade purposes, for settlement in international trade. And that's only to be expected. Some of you may have noticed yesterday, it certainly made a mark for me. There was President Trump was sitting there in the Oval Office signing the executive orders, and somebody brought up the topic of Spain. And I don't even think he's right on this, but he said, oh, something about Spain being a member of BRICS. And then he went off on a tangent about BRICS and basically said, any member of BRICS can expect 100% tariff on the import of goods to the U.S. And what immediately struck me was that that may even drive more countries to Bitcoin, because there some of the core nations like Russia, I believe, probably don't care, but or countries like Brazil and India, that's a really big deal, and we'll see how all these geopolitics play out. Go ahead.
Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you think that, you know, with Trump just making these flagrant, you know, I'm going to tariff anybody that tries to go outside the U.S. dollar, do you think it hits a point where Russia or China is like, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and announce that we've been acquiring Bitcoin. We have 400, 500, whatever that amount is, 1,000 of Bitcoin, catch up now. Do you think they just try and do that to do a dig? Because it seems like everyone's waiting for the United States to announce first, but do you think if they just keep pushing their buttons, they're like, okay, we're just going to tell the world we've had this and we've been doing trades?
It's possible. I think it kind of leads to the point I was going to, though. And this is where mining comes in. I'll say this. I think that with all the talk of strategic Bitcoin reserve, I think what has been largely missed, even within the Bitcoin community, is that movements toward building strategic Bitcoin reserves, in my opinion, are less significant than moves toward nation state mining. Because nation state mining is really about economic sovereignty. So I think best illustrate that, and I've given a few talks, so forgive me for anybody listening that's heard me say it before, but if I was suddenly the head of state for, let's say, a country like Bolivia or Lithuania, and I had the choice of directing the country's resources to, let's say, go acquire 30,000 Bitcoin or something on that order. These are countries that are on the order of, by the way, about 0.25% of world GDP. So I could say, well, I'll go buy something like that, 30,000 Bitcoin. Or I could take the same amount of money and invest it in infrastructure and programs so that I controlled 1/4 of the world's hash rate for several decades to come. So if I direct it to the Bitcoin, I have some protection and financial stability because of it. However, I really don't do anything to protect the economic sovereignty of the country. If I invest it in mining, it means that I start controlling blocks. So if I can control 0.25% of the world's blocks, as an example, I would control 2 blocks a week. And that would give me about 8,000 transactions that I would have essentially absolute control over, and that would protect me as a nation so that the business of the state, the business of the corporations of that country, and the business of the citizens of that country essentially could never be blockaded. And to me, that's much more significant than owning the Bitcoin.
Yomar, do you have a question? We can't hear it, Yomar. Yeah, I think this is a really interesting idea, Bob. And Yomar, if you get your mic back, let us know.
Is it working now?
Yep, go ahead.
No, I think, is that kind of like the concept? I still have it on my shelf. I just haven't had time to get to it, but is that kind of the concept of, what's covered in soft war in terms of like securing the hash rate so that you can't be censored in the,
there's some, overlap between my thought process and Jason Lowry, who's, the author of that book. So we do share some similar ideas. Because I think what, if you look at going forward is if you look at a nation like the ones that I talked about, I'll even back up further. I have a vision that what will be the most likely scenario is that we will see three groups of miners in the future. And I'm going to put it forward enough. Let's just say the state of mining 20 years from now is, I think, essentially any viable nation state will have control over some block templates. So they will control a certain number of blocks, probably with the goal typically being to align with the GDP of that nation. So if you have a 1% of the world's GDP, you'll want 1% of the world's blocks. It's a, I think, a crude barometer. You'll have a lot of large banks and financial institutions mining. I think it will be existential for those organizations. If they do not participate, then I think they will be dead. And they'll often align with the nation states. There'll be partnerships there. And then there will be some percentage of the world's mining left that's kind of like today with the same spirit as today. But I think it will largely be pleb mining, what I call rabbit mining, and, you know, small to medium sized commercials mining, most likely more off grid than on grid, by the way. So I think that's the direction that we're moving. And I think a lot of nations, like if I was, I gave that example of Bolivia before, if I was the president of Bolivia, what I would be doing is I would probably own some of the mining directly. But what I would also be doing is I would be trying to attract miners, or more accurately said, hashers to my country. And I would put programs in place that would be things like, hey, we will offer 3 cents per kilowatt hour energy. We'll offer, you know, no taxes on any gains, potentially low interest loans. But the caveat will be any organization that brings hash rate to the country must use the Bolivia pool, and the Bolivia pool will control the template creation, meaning they will make the transaction selection for the blocks that group tries to mine. And that's really the key. You have to have control over the transaction selection. So, I think we are moving toward a world where that power of being the creator of the template comes with, you know, massive responsibility, but of course, massive influence and power. Again, that's why I think the big banks will all be involved. And the dynamics, there's kind of a mantra about the economic incentive. Like, people think that miners have a pure economic incentive, that they'll chase the highest fee transactions, that those miners that don't chase the highest fee transactions will eventually get overwhelmed by those that do. It's kind of this equilibrium that people talk about. I think that it's misguided, because I think what people have missed when they talk about that is that the power that comes with controlling the financial transactions can overwhelm that direct economic incentive. So one example is this nation state example, meaning like, hey, if the sovereignty of a country like Bolivia is dependent on having control of a block, they don't care how big the subsidy is or how big the fees are. They need to make sure the business of the country continues on. And it's much like earlier we brought up Bank of America, Bank of America custodying Bitcoin. Wonderful. I think they will, well, I shouldn't say wonderful, but they will do it. It will be popular. So then the next piece is, if they're custodying a massive amount of Bitcoin for people, then the people for whom they are custodying need to have confidence that Bank of America can move that money around for them. And again, think forward a handful of years. So the only way Bank of America can really guarantee that is to have control of block space. So I would predict that they will have some mechanism to have control over mining. That could be buying a mining organization, creating a mining organization, or creating alliances that give them control over a block template creation. But one way or the another, eventually they will say they want control of blocks. And they will not make, when they have control of a block, they won't make template decisions first and foremost based upon how much Bitcoin they earn, but based upon the obligations they have to their clients and the importance of the client relationship.
Do you think there's a possibility of them, like nation state pools, you know, like instead of having, the various like pools out there and stuff, you know, the U.S. government just saying like, hey, like if you're mining in the United States, you got to use the U.S. pool and
yes.
Use that as a means of, controlling yes. hash rate.
Exactly. I may have missed it. I slipped that in there. I said that about the Bolivia pool. So I would say, hey, come one, come all to Bolivia to mine, but and you get these tax incentives and grants and blah, 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 and low cost energy, but you have to use the Bolivia pool. And that, I think that could happen in the U.S. I think it will definitely happen in a lot of these smaller nation states. Because it's a lot easier for them. It removes some of the massive capital requirements of the nation state. Cause that's really what they want. They're not about building the Bitcoin reserve. There's nothing wrong with that, by the way. I'm not saying that that is, doesn't have some significance, but this is much more important. That, and I've done the math before. I may have even done it on this show before, but just real quickly for people. Every year, the Bitcoin network produces about 53,000 blocks. That's what the 10-minute block times. If you extrapolate that math out, 53,000 blocks. There's about 4,000 transactions per block. That gives us 200 million transactions at the base layer on an annual basis. Now, there's some things that could be done. It's a little more technical with Vault and CTV and Opcat and all those sort of things. But it's my opinion they don't have a material impact on that number in the long run. So the world has to share 200 million base layer interactions every year. That's everything from one country sending money to another country to a UTXO consolidation or a coin join or moving money off of an exchange or onto an exchange. There's only 200 million. And with 8 billion people, 330 million corporations and 200 nation states or so, 200 million is not very much to share. And so I believe it becomes potentially the most valuable commodity in the world. In some ways, even more precious than Bitcoin itself. I guess I would still call Bitcoin the most precious commodity, but the block space itself, I think, needs to be thought of as a commodity. And it's a one-time use thing, right? So you get in, some people will say, well, it has an inexhaustible supply. It's infinite. And that's true if you can live long enough, if you or the organization you're in can live long enough and there's no urgency to the transactions that you're going through. But you could think of that transaction capacity as absolutely scarce in any window of time. Because if you tell me a time frame like a day, a month, a week, a year, a decade, I can already tell you how many transactions the network is capable of in that time window. And there's not a tremendous amount that can be done to change that.
Do you believe that there's anybody currently in the administration that realizes the significance?
I do not believe that the people in the administration understand it. Largely, I don't believe the people that have, you know, from our community or the crypto community understand this. Hopefully there's somebody in there that'll listen to a Jason Lowry. I don't think the people, it's like within our community, the voices that are, I don't want to come off being an asshole or too critical, but the people that are close to the administration aren't people that understand this sort of thing. They're a lot more people from the financial mindset people, even the miners, to be honest, they really don't get this stuff very well. So, but the realization will come fast. It'll come really, really fast.
I'm not going to hold you to this prediction, but let's say that during this week, Trump brings up SBR. And then other nation states start going through and announcing it. How quickly do these little effects take place where there's all of a sudden there's this race and they understand the importance of it? And again, just a guess, not holding you to this. Do you think we have weeks, months, or years?
I think it'll take months for it to start rippling. I don't want to violate. I have had the ability to meet with, for instance, some members of Congress and sent in the Senate. Myself, and I've had a chance to talk to them a little bit, but it's pretty difficult to take somebody who knows next to nothing about Bitcoin to begin with and get them to this point in the conversation. So if I have, I had lunch with a congressman, maybe 3 months ago, and I touched on the subject with him. But it's, you know, I can't take him from, you know, these are kind of advanced thoughts that I think requires somebody to have been in the space for quite a while. But I think in a matter of months. Now, I will say this, though. I think in Russia and Iran and North Korea and El Salvador and Bhutan and places like that, I'm quite sure there are senior officials within those countries that clearly understand this already. So the U.S. is behind in that respect. Go ahead.
Do you think, like, so I posted one of my articles up in the thread, and I make I touch on a lot of the same stuff that you're talking about here in terms of like national sovereignty and stuff. Do you think that people like, representatives and government and, you know, the bureaucrats there, do they understand, like, like I make the case that these nations, like BRICS nations, they don't need the ruble to be the reserve currency, right? So like, that's what makes Bitcoin such a strong alternative for them, because if they get Bitcoin in place instead of the US dollar, while they're not really necessarily gaining power over the monetary system, they're taking that power away from the United States. Do you think that they understand that, like, concept and that dynamic, that, like, because of the over-weaponization of the dollar, you know, we've made it something that, you know, for any country's national sovereignty interests, you know, removing the dollar as that base layer is beneficial for them? Do you agree with that? And I assume you agree with that, but do you think that, like, people in our government understand that, like, that dynamic?
No. And I think even Trump himself, when that realization comes, is going to have a very mixed feeling about it. You know, hence like what he said yesterday about the BRICS nations, like, hey, you know, if you threaten the dollar's position in the world, then we will bring the wrath of the U.S. economic system against you, you know, through these tariffs. So no, I don't think they understand it. I think what's interesting within BRICS is that BRICS has a difficult situation in that I think most of those nations and the people representing those nations within the BRICS forum, they're people coming from classic economic and banking backgrounds. So they're still primarily in the mindset of trying to preserve national currencies. You get a lot of gold related things. If you read the BRICS materials, you see different kind of thoughts about backing BRICS currencies with a basket of currencies plus gold and oil and these types of things. They have mentioned Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in there a few times too. But then if you look at as a practical matter, what you have, but there's no real economic activity running through that system. If you look as a practical matter, you have Putin making very specific statements that nobody can stop a Bitcoin transaction. You have the Russian trade minister saying they are actively using Bitcoin in trade. So I think the BRICS organization can essentially fall apart. I don't think it will for quite a while. I think it'll have, they'll preserve it for quite a while, especially led by China and Russia. They'll want to keep it together. They don't want to acquiesce and look like they've lost to the US. But as a practical matter, I think we'll see Bitcoin usage increase tremendously for actual trade, you know, for actual money movements. And I think that's where somebody like Trump is going to find himself in a bit of a quandary as he starts to understand it better. Like, and hopefully he'll continue to like it and just go along with it, and not make some sort of major reversal position. But that's possible.
Bob, maybe it's posturing, but we heard Trump yesterday talk about Spain when being part of BRICS, and yeah, basically that the United States has all the negotiating power. Do you think that this kind of comes to a head as Trump maybe meets with Putin this year and they discuss, you know, Ukraine, BRICS, so on and so forth?
I think it'll be part of those conversations. Yes, I think it will. Obviously, they have bigger issues, probably, at least more immediate issues with the situation with Ukraine. But Trump's a great negotiator, right? I don't think anybody can deny that. He, and I think he sees certainly much better than Biden, two or three steps ahead. He gets the second and third order effects of decisions and not just the first order effects. And, you know, throwing political pieces aside, that's what was always alarming to me about Biden was, I think that the actions that he took over and over again, not just the economic ones, like kicking Russia out of the SWIFT system and some of the asset seizures, just could never see those second and third order effects. Because I think that we can look at, for instance, we can probably thank Biden to a certain degree for accelerating the international acceptance of Bitcoin and all of these other nations becoming a lot more active in it because of this, because that realization that if you're not in the US's inner circle, that your economic sovereignty is not guaranteed. And, you know, a country like Russia has the resources to withstand it, but a country like Bolivia doesn't. And most of the countries of the world are more like Bolivia than they are like Russia. So even if you're on good terms or neutral, if you're a head of state and you're on, you know, neutral to good terms with the U.S., you still have to have a plan B, because it only takes, one an administration change in the U.S. or a change of heart or you know, one misstep, and you're on the wrong side of things, and it would probably be a fatal blow to most nations.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if you're Iran and one administration lifts sanctions and releases your U.S. dollars, and then the next puts it back, and then they're lifted, put back, you know, flip-flopping. I mean, it kind of signals that, like, between that and, like, I think the worst case was what we did with Russia with SWIFT and yeah. That. You know, it just signals, like, you know, if you step out of line, then we'll just take all of your reserves. It defeats the whole purpose of a foreign currency reserve, in my opinion. You know, it's a direct, like, you can have your reserve if you give up your sovereignty, you know? So I think it's a matter of time before that shift is made. It's really interesting, though, the other dynamics you bring up about the block space and stuff. I really got to read more into that and, you know, try to grasp that a little bit better.
Yeah, well, I think it's always good, you know, at the core, I think you start with the numbers, right? So I think that's a thing that hasn't happened within the Bitcoin community well. And I've spoken a lot about this for the last couple of years. And, I would say, Jason Lowry obviously has as well. He takes a little different perspective. I'm looking at it, I think, a little more from the, economic perspective. I think he looks at it a little more from, defense perspective, but we are seeing something. There's an overlap, and we are seeing some very consistent things, and that's that. Although there's one difference too. He talks a lot about the hash rate, and certainly you have to have the hash rate. But I think what I'm trying to get people aware of is the power of being the block template creator. Those 53,000 blocks a year. That's a really small number. If you think about, you know, the ultimately, if you believe in a hyper-Bitcoinized world, if you think of, well, ultimately, all the economic activity of the world has to settle at that layer, even if we've done our job, right? And we, and when I say we do our job, meaning we've got all kinds of level two and level three kind of activities going on in the world, right? With Lightning and Liquid and Fedi and all these other things are happening at high levels. It still has to settle at the base layer, right? And there's only 53,000 blocks a year that have to settle all that activity. So the algorithm that determines what goes into those transactions, you know, is up to the block template creator. And so, like you said, you know, is there, like, Trump made this statement back in Nashville, like, hey, I want to have all remaining Bitcoin mined in the U.S. Now, if he really wanted that, and I don't really like that idea, but if we play that out, he should say, well, you know, let's have a national pool. Now, we already have, under the U.S. control, we already have the world's largest pool, Foundry, which, depending on how you want to add it up, but it's somewhere between 30% and 40% of the world's hash rate, or 30% to 40% of the world's blocks are produced through Foundry. And if you want to add in Luxor, you know, now you maybe even can get in the low 40. So, you know, we could force everything into Foundry, and then the U.S. could dictate to Foundry what algorithm they needed to use, whether that was OFAC compliance, whitelist, blacklist, prioritization of government activities and blocks. You know, they can be whatever you want. That's one thing that maybe a lot of people don't understand, is that it is the prerogative of the block template creator to put in whatever transactions they wish. And like, as we sit here this morning, I didn't check this morning, as I think it was yesterday, there's roughly 150,000 transactions waiting for confirmation. And those are the publicly broadcast ones. There can be, I guess, theoretically, an infinite number of unbroadcast ones. And it's the prerogative of each individual block template creator, which is primarily the pools today, to decide which ones they want to go for. As I mentioned before, the assumption is typically, well, they should pick the ones with the highest fees. But I think that's somebody looking at only the first order effects. So in other words, if there's a transaction that is, I'm trying to get off the top of my head. If there's a transaction, let's say it's the U.S. government trying to get a payment to some organization to get some hostages released, the importance of, even if they put a low fee on that, if they have control of the template creation, they're gonna prioritize that one as number one. That might even be free. They don't even have to put any in.
Bob, don't you think that could lead to more hostage taking? Like, it could be dangerous for certain people in certain places?
Sure. It could. I should also point out, there's the power of being the block template creator, and if people don't know, I just want to be transparent. I'm on the board of directors at Ocean, which we are a pool, and I am an investor there. So I'm also the CEO at Barefoot Mining, and part of the reason that I'm part of that organization is ocean is really the only pool that allows the miner, like a company like Barefoot, to create our own templates. So we're part of the pool, but each person in the pool can do our own. I think that these kind of situations, though, yeah, get very, they get very difficult to kind of play out, like what happens in the future. Like I mentioned Bank of America before. So if I'm Bank of America, why do I want to be a miner? I want to be a miner because several factors. The first one is I want to take the business of Bank of America and prioritize it in my blocks. And again, I don't care what the fees are. Obviously, I get the block rewards and I can build a little Bitcoin. That's a secondary. But that to me, that's a secondary impact. I get to have a voice in potential protocol changes in the future. So as opcode activations or other soft fork activities come up, or even hard fork activities come up, the activation is through the block. So I get a voice in where those things go, you know, and I think that that's very important. It's one of the reasons, by the way, we really need to make sure that we have a very healthy amount of plebs and maybe more ethos-centric organizations mining, so that we have enough horsepower there that the nation state corporate mining doesn't overwhelm the whole system, right? So that's probably my biggest fear is in the medium term for Bitcoin, is that we lose that control. And once we lose that control, we'll never get it back, right? It'd be impossible to get it back if it got out of hand.
Really quick, I do want to just give a quick thank you to our partners. Black Sheep Ammo, restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Punch Plate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Go to punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining. Use the code BTCVETS with an S for 5% off. Pay in Bitcoin, get additional 10% off, so 15% off your order. Solosatoshi.com. Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th in Juneau. It is going to be an amazing conference, family friendly. Go to bitcoinalaska.org to secure your tickets and your lodging today. And click up in the nest the link to get your cold card. Again, secure your Bitcoin like it's worth 10 to 100x of what it is right now. We have no idea what's going to happen, and the Bitcoin price can take off. Not your keys, not your coins. Click the link and get an MK4 or cold card Q. So, Bob, I want to go ahead and kind of pick your brain a little bit with something else. You've been in Bitcoin for a while. Do you think that this cycle is going to be different than any of the cycles that have come before us? When we take a look and just kind of look at global adoption of Bitcoin, potential of banks starting to adopt Bitcoin in the United States, and we have these large corporations purchasing Bitcoin. Is this cycle typical, or is it just going to be just blow everyone's mind with the potential?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we're going to see the cycle start to wane a little bit. By that, what I mean is that if we look at the previous cycles, all driven off of the halving, that we're reaching the point where that impact is really not that significant anymore. So, like the supply shock that would come from the halving doesn't really exist anymore. And even to the degree like we're feeling the cycle right now, I believe it's more psychological that people are conditioned for the cycle than it is that there's some sort of financial, economic reason for the cycle to occur. And then on top of it, as you've said, I completely agree with you that we're reaching the point where the actors who are kind of participating and driving most of the activity around Bitcoin are completely different actors than the actors that we saw in the first 15 years of Bitcoin. So I think it'll be very dangerous. Like, I'm not a trader. I'm not a chart guy. That's not what I do. But I think it'd be very dangerous for people to draw too many conclusions about similarities between what goes on now and in the future to the past.
Okay. That's good to know. The last question I have for you then, before we start wrapping everything up, what are your thoughts on Mara and Riot taking out these large loans just to go out and purchase Bitcoin directly off the market instead of just trying to acquire it through mining? What's the significance of this? What are they prepping for?
I hate being negative, but I really don't. But I guess you asked the question, so I answer it. I really don't like it. I don't think it's good for them. I don't think it's good for Bitcoin. If you have a miner, I think a properly run mining organization, I'll put it this way, like, you know, what I do, if I have an investor that comes into my organization, part of what I'm pitching to them is, hey, if you invest with me in one of my projects, let's say somebody's going to invest $100,000 into my organization, my benchmark is I have to show them why they're going to make more Bitcoin than they could buy from that, right? And so if that $100,000 could buy them one Bitcoin today, I have to show them that in the end, I'm going to produce more than one Bitcoin back to them, not dollar based, but Bitcoin based, right? So I think when organizations are taking that money and buying Bitcoin directly, what they're saying is they can't, as an organization, do what I just said, right? And if they can't, then in my opinion, how can you justify being a miner? Like, you have to be able to produce one Bitcoin in should produce more than one Bitcoin out. I'm not saying immediately, but say over a 4-year period of time or something like that, that's what you should be able to do. Additionally, one of the greatest untold stories in kind of the whole Bitcoin ecosystem is the damage that Core Scientific did, not just to mining, but to the entire Bitcoin ecosystem in 2022. What we saw was what happens was at the time, the biggest miner went public, took on $1 billion of debt, had tens of thousands of Bitcoin, and 11 months after going public was bankrupt. And in the course of that unwinding, it's my opinion, it's hard to quantify, but it's my opinion that the damage that they did to Bitcoin in 2022 was on par with like a Celsius and Voyager. Wouldn't put them quite in the FTX class, but definitely in the Celsius and Voyager. The amount of Bitcoin that they flooded the market with, which was coming out of their treasury as they were bleeding money, right? They had no choice but to start selling and just dumping massive amounts of Bitcoin. And then the overbuying, by the way, that they did, they had taken all this debt to buy a whole bunch of machines that really weren't supported by the market, caused a lot of misallocation of capital in the mining industry that we felt for a couple of years. I think we're only now at the point where the negative ramifications have finally kind of gone away. So what worries me is organizations that really haven't shown a track record of being profitable and making money, building these big treasuries, taking on a lot of debt. And you know, what it says to me is, hey, you're not running your own organization very well, number one. And number two, you now present this risk of an unwinding at some point in the future where that Bitcoin could really come back and create some problems. Does that answer the question?
Yes. Yes, it does. I do understand where you're getting with that. So it's just a risk if they do kind of falter or go under, they can't afford to pay off the note back.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I view it very differently than like a MicroStrategy building its Bitcoin position, because MicroStrategy doesn't have material risk in its core business that could force the unwinding, right? They're at the point where, you know, they have a stable core business, which is kind of almost irrelevant to the main thing now. And they don't have some aspect of that business that could create a drain. But as I read what a company like Marathon or Riot is doing, is they're essentially saying, hey, we can't invest in Bitcoin mining and produce an output better than just buying Bitcoin itself. And that's kind of how it's a little bit simplistic view of it. But, you know, and then if you just look at the financials of most of the larger public miners over the last 2 to 3 years, there's really nothing very impressive there. They've largely lost massive amounts of money.
Lisa, I saw that you had your hand up. Good morning, ma'am. And go ahead and let's hear your question.
Hey, everybody. Good morning. Good morning, Bob. I mean, I see that we're at the top of the hour, Coleman, and this is just an entirely different, Bob, I share so many concerns, and primarily I feel like the public miners, if they can continue to plug into the grid, right, they're essentially demonstrating that they don't really understand the link all the way through to the national security implication. That is, you know, U.S. mining, but U.S. hash rate, as you so brilliantly point out, you know, these Bitcoin veteran people have really alerted me and opened my eyes to the need for preparation in the event that the, you know, ultimate catastrophe happens. And, mm-hmm. you know, God bless Trump. Hopefully he keeps us out of war with people we don't exactly have strong friendships with, Iran, Russia, China, North Korea. But, you know, I'm really not convinced that we won't have massive grid failures for one reason or another, whether it's a threat, an attack, or just our own absolute blatant disregard for repair. And so if you have every public miner plugged in all over the grid with thousands of megawatts, mm-hmm. and we're 5 years down the road and the whole world runs on the Bitcoin network, right? It is the base layer of all financial transactions. You really are in trouble. And so when I look at them buying large amounts of Bitcoin, I feel like, well, I mean, do they understand the inherent risk of the entire grid going down? Because I don't know this to be true, but I would doubt that Lloyd's of London is prepared to provide them business insurance in the event that they are not able to operate for 1 month or 6 months or 1 year. And so, you know, perhaps Bitcoin price continues to go higher if our grids get attacked. But I do think this is really it demonstrates why strong alliances with energy rich countries will be exceedingly important within the Trump administration, and also why companies like Barefoot are important in this next, you know, 5 or 10 years of Bitcoin.
Yeah, first, good morning, Lisa. Nice to hear from you. It is real scary, and I speak a lot about wild mining versus captured mining. It's a whole different angle, but captured mining means that your ability to mine requires the permission of others. And there are two main aspects of that. The first piece relates to what you're saying about the grid. There's way, way too much U.S. grid dependency. And even then, it's even more localized, right? It's, you know, ERCOT and Georgia and a couple other places where we just have way, way too much concentration. The second piece of captured relates more to what happens to the public mining organizations typically, meaning auditors and regulators and bureaucrats kind of force them into certain ways of doing business. And largely to date, even those pools, we talked about like the concentration with Foundry. Part of the reason they use Foundry, and it's a long story that goes with it, is because they kind of abdicate the mining, what I call the mining function. They really are just hashers. They abdicate the mining function, meaning the block template creation, the protocol activations, all that sort of stuff. And they do it because it really makes their life simple. But they really shouldn't call themselves miners. I call them mercenary hashers. Like they are hired guns of the pool in this case. Wild mining means that you produce your own power, and thank you for what you said about Barefoot, Lisa, but you know, I do have some on-grid presence, but I'm trying to lessen that as a percentage of what we do more and more. Like our focus right now is on as much mining where we produce the power. And as I mentioned, we produce our own block templates. We run with a pool where we get our payment directly from the Coinbase transaction when we win a block. Like trying to get so that, short of probably somebody showing up in my office and pointing a gun to my head, it can't be stopped. And even then, it actually really wouldn't stop it. I guess it would be my choice at that point, if I want to take the bullet or not, but it'd be really hard to stop us. But we're gravitating, the industry is gravitating more and more to this. And I share that concern, about more and more grid dependency. The good news is that the wild opportunities are really now the best opportunities as well. So like what we're finding is sites where, you know, for instance, we've purchased some stranded natural gas wells that we now own and we have full control over. We have our own hydroelectric facility. It's not connected to the grid. We now have an anaerobic digestion site that's basically part of a dairy farm complex where we produce our energy from the methane from the cow shit there. Like these sorts of, I think, operations, and all of those produce energy less expensively than we can buy on the grid today. So hopefully other people realize that. The problem is, though, that the big organizations, a lot of those opportunities might be 2 megawatts, 1 megawatt, 8 megawatts, like those sort of opportunities. The big organizations don't pursue that class of mining site. What I think we really need within the infrastructure is we need thousands and tens of thousands of those kind of sites. Then the Bitcoin infrastructure becomes very, very difficult to attack and very immune to things like a grid failure. But they're going the other way. They're going toward, let's build a gigawatt here and 500 megawatts there. And, you know, that worries me. And I kind of wish some of the capital flowing their way would dry up, because they don't seem to be able to do anything but pursue that. And in fact, as we get into this next bull run a little more, I think the capital will probably even flow harder. So yeah, sorry, you raised a great point, Lisa.
Yeah, it's really, well, thank you. It's interesting, you know, some of the work that I'm doing right now with Dan Morrison is trying to match off-grid mining sites with miners or partners. And I don't think that, you know, as you said, owning, like you are doing, owning real energy assets is quite aligned with their business strategy, even though there's at least one public miner who has, I think I heard this, I haven't seen it, but I think Bloomberg did an article on an oil field service company now, which was really kind of surprising news to me, and like happy news if that's true. But to your point, I'm right there with you. I think that we need tens of thousands of decentralized small mining sites, and there's plenty of energy out there. There's plenty of places to do it. There's plenty of well pads. There are gas processing plants. There's compressor stations. It's just not super sexy because it's not 500 megawatts at a time. It's 3 megawatts or 8.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's some you may have heard me talk about the rabbits and the horses and the elephants, and the elephant sites, which are the type of big on-grid sites primarily that we talked about. In my opinion, we're at a point where they're no longer really good for Bitcoin. And, you know, the problem is to keep a balance across the ecosystem. Every time somebody brings up a 500 megawatt elephant class site, if we want to keep some sort of balance within the ecosystem, we now have to go find 500 megawatts or more of these 1 or 2 or 8 or half a megawatt or whatever sites. And there just aren't enough organizations pursuing that class stuff right now. So, you know, I'm trying. I have this difficult proposition that I've faced, where by not being public, I don't have the same kind of access to capital, and I've resisted it to date primarily because I'm trying to stay as free and wild as possible and do the right thing for Bitcoin. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's a space out there to go public and, you know, just pursue this strategy. I don't know. It's hard. Because, like, for me, you know, I came from a world, you know, being part of a public company, and it's a pain in the ass. Like it's a really bad gig, like to be a public company. It's so difficult, on a daily basis. And you have these handcuffs and shareholder expectations of being private is just so much easier. But I don't know, maybe that has to change at some point just because the greater good requires access to more capital. I don't know.
Hey, Bob, I just want to get a quick check. How much time do you have left with us?
10 minutes.
Okay. Lisa, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I invited everything up on the stage. So if you had a question, you're more than welcome to fire it up. Otherwise, I'm going to go back to Lisa.
I mean, thank you, Bob, for all of that. I'm not quite sure if I'm in the matrix, but, I hear everything that you've said, and I feel like, you know, that maybe the obvious answer, they just don't know it yet, is that these energy companies will end up being Bitcoin miners. And not in a big scale, but as a means of solving their own operational issues. Right. I mean, they're actually in the United States, oil wells that are shut in because there's nothing that's ultimately convenient, to do with methane. And that's stupid. Right.
Yeah.
And trying to find a Bitcoin miner who's interested in running engines, out on a well pad. It's just not their area of expertise. And running engines on a well pad is an energy company's area of expertise, really, right? Like they have so many operations on those sites. So, you know, who knows? Interesting times ahead, but thank you for everything. And Coleman, you need to have Bob on like once a week because he just makes us all smarter.
I can agree to that. That's up to Bob's schedule though.
Well, thank you, Lisa. That's very kind of you. You're always so nice to me. Thank you.
Everything. Can you hear me, sir?
Sure, I can. Hi, guys. I actually have a quick question for Bob. It's concerning whether or not you have considered replacing your energy sources for over-unity systems. So the concept of over-unity systems is that you could get as much energy required from your machines without having to have any input in the energy. So you could substitute the resources used for energy infrastructure and replace that with more machines because you have an energy system where you're tapping from the quantum field to maximize energy usage. So you wouldn't necessarily have to jump the hurdle of the regulatory energy system we have, but really going beyond the methane, nuclear, or green energy and just going straight to tapping into the quantum energy and maximizing that. And the reason I come up to say this is because I believe your company is the only company maximizing the Dayton protocol and the Tides system. So this, I feel, would just be a complete loop for you. So I don't know if you've thought about that yet or are thinking about it, but I just thought to throw that suggestion to you. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. I have to admit ignorance on that topic. I've made a note here, so I will look at how that works. But I'm just not familiar enough with how it works, but I'm open to everything. Like if there's an easier way to generate energy, then wonderful. I'm all about it.
Awesome. Check out Dr. David Greer. David, G-R-E-E-R. He is the one to really go down the rabbit hole on. Okay. Before Lockheed Martin patents the usage of quantum energy fields. Anyways, thank you for your work, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
So we're running out of time here, so I just want to go ahead and Bob, is there any final closing remarks or comments you'd like to make? And what is the best way we can support you and Barefoot Mining and Ocean?
Well, thank you. Ocean, if you're out there and you've got a little bit of hash power, come on over and join us. Ocean.xyz. Very easy to configure your hash rate and start working with Ocean. Even better if you can run a datum server and, you know, create your own templates and start participating. I mentioned before, if once you start doing that, that's when you're a real miner. Like, so if you want to be a real miner, then that's what you have to do. Barefootmining.com, especially if you're, you know, somebody looking for investments in private mining organizations. The way I work is every time I bring up a new site, I actually create a new legal entity around that site and usually bring in a group of investors to help me fund that site. And we distribute the profits in Bitcoin every month. That's our primary business model. I do want to say sometimes when I talk on these topics, it can be kind of a downer for people, and it can cause them to, I think, worry about things maybe they haven't worried about before. But I don't want people to walk away with that. I am still hugely optimistic about Bitcoin. We have a phenomenal future. We're going to have a phenomenal impact on the world. We just have to take care of Bitcoin. And the reason I talk about these things is that by creating visibility to the exposures Bitcoin has, we can fix the problems, and we can fix them, you know, before they really impact us in a negative way. And things like mining pool centralization, or, you know, being too grid dependent, or, you know, if you're an owner of stock, for instance, in a public mining company, and they're behaving in a way, if you haven't really explored, like, what behavior are they exhibiting? How are they impacting the ecosystem? I think as a shareholder in those organizations, that's something you should do. And if you don't like what they're doing, tell them. And if they continue to not do what you like, then sell their stock. You know, you have power. You have ways in which you can vote and participate and be part of it. I think that's the big thing. I think a lot of people in Bitcoin are maybe too passive, and they don't think about all the different ways that they can have an impact on the future of Bitcoin. And that's just one example. If you own some Bitcoin and you own a public mining stock, make sure they're behaving in a way consistent with how you feel Bitcoin should go. And make sure that, you know, you express that vote. If, you know, we talk a lot in Bitcoin about running a node, but hey, even better, go get a BitAx and start mining, run a datum server and create a block template. Like, do these sorts of things and really help Bitcoin. But we have a really bright future, and that's, you know, really what I want to leave people with is a very positive feeling about where we're going, but also hopefully some level of responsibility to participate and do something to make sure it fulfills its full vision.
Well, that's perfect. I want to thank you so much, Bob, for coming on the show today. I really do enjoy it when you come on here, and I do like asking you questions. A lot of this is above my head, so I like it when you break it down and make it a little easier for me to understand. So open invitation to come back on anytime. And I mean that with all sincerity.
Thank you, gentlemen.
And I do want to thank everybody who tuned in this morning with us. It's been really fun. But I do have to wrap up. My daughter's been staring at me for the last 5 minutes through the window, trying to get me to go outside and play in the snow with her. So I do want to say thank you again, everybody, for tuning in. If you're out there in the cold, stay safe. If you're in Houston, go play in the snow, be a little kid. But we'll be back tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. Have an absolutely fantastic day. Don't shitcoin. It's like trying to catch that train that's already left.